Welcome to the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and after 2 years of development, I'm very happy to trot out this teaser trailer with no actual gameplay footage featuring Kyle Cross.
Hey, I'm coming out in 2020. What's up, everybody?
Look at all those graphics that won't actually be rendered on any of the hardware that we have right now.
Look at all of those graphics that don't exist, because we haven't started developing this game yet. We're just announcing that it exists. Ooh.
It's so pretty and thematic. I wish I knew what the actual game was.
Yes. What game? There is no game here. It's only the excitement of a game, the anticipation of a game. Can't you get excited?
We're all being gamed ourselves.
Can't you get excited? Excited about the prospect of a video game existing that doesn't exist yet?
I used to, and then I got old and bitter.
Oh, okay. Is that what we're doing on this episode? Sounds good to me.
Oh, absolutely. I start geeking out.
Yeah. We're old and bitter. So if you're excited about E3 and don't want that ruined for you, you may not want to listen to this episode. Although. This is the E3 highlights episode, so this is the highlights of E3, so we're not really going to get into too much of the negative stuff, I hope, but still.
Till we get to that point, how are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there. I wish I could say I've been busy with something fun and important, but not really. So, how have you been doing?
Well, I just got back from Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina. So everyone who made it out to the show, thank you for coming by. You were beautiful people. So lovely to meet you. And that's a long trip, Kyle.
Yeah, you drive, right?
Yep. 2 days down, 2 days up, 3 days to show with no breaks.
That's a mistake.
No. No, because flying down would make things harder in its own way.
I understand. Still, it seems like it's really crazy to do that.
It is, but I wouldn't not do it, you know? Because at this point, I've been doing the show for like 10 years or more, and there are families that come by that's like, oh, look how big your kids have grown, and... Oh, God, you guys used to be like eye level with the table, and now you're going to college and you're taller than me.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying it's not worth going. I'm just saying the way you're going is, that seems like that's a lot of work.
I'll try dog sled next year.
Okay, that might be better.
I am happy, though, because usually E3 falls about the same time we get on the road.
Yeah.
So I miss all of E3. I can't really keep up with it most of the time anyway. But this year I was actually able to watch stuff before we went on the road. So
right, it was the week before. It was the week before. So we were like, last episode you were talking about how you were going to miss most of E3. And I think you ended up seeing most of it.
Yeah, so that just proves I'm an idiot. So I'm glad we got that recorded.
That's okay. It's okay. It's, well, like you said, it's usually the same time. So I don't know why you would believe anything different this year compared to other years, but
I guess only there were dates and times.
I guess scheduling. I guess scheduling just fell differently this year between the two of them. So hey, that's cool.
Well, we have a lot to talk about, so let's go ahead and just knock out the Bumble Raffle winner. This episode's winner is...
John M.
Congratulations, John M. If you want to be as cool as John, write into us at bumblecast@yahoo.com or be a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast to be automatically entered into every drawing. John, we're going to fire you off an email, see what you want for your prize. Thank you so much for listening to the Bumblecast.
All right. And with that, couple weeks out from E3. I think we've had time to decompress and to kind of gather our thoughts and think about things a little bit more. And we're going to talk about what happened this year at E3 2018.
I just say we'll start off with, I guess it was the first show of the show, would be Microsoft Conference.
Nope, actually it was EA, but they didn't really have anything interesting or good there much at all, really, so...
The first conference that we care about was Microsoft.
Yeah, EA was like Battlefield 5 looks kind of interesting, and that's about it. But yeah, so we'll
and sports games.
Yeah, if you like the sports, there's your thing.
I mean, I have no interest in them whatsoever, but I know that they are regular, reliable sellers. So if that's your thing, I'm happy for you.
I have some.
Not going to be on the show.
I've had some fun with the football games. I will say that, but it's been many years since I've actually played any of them. So, but yeah, going on to Microsoft. What did you think, Ian? What were your?
That was your thoughts? I missed actually, okay. Because I don't have an Xbox One, and there aren't any Microsoft IPs that I'm really jazzed about. I've fallen off the Halo bandwagon really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the teaser for the next one anyway, and I'm like, wow, that's really pretty and tells me absolutely nothing. Pass.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Microsoft also has, like, everything is cross-compatible with Windows 10, so if you have a decent computer, you're pretty much good to go regardless. But there really isn't a whole lot. Microsoft has kind of... They don't have many first-party IPs to begin with, and their exclusives, they don't have many exclusives either. But
exclusives seem to have gone the way of the dinosaur for the most part.
Yeah, which I think is partially okay with. On one hand, it does kind of diminish the need to purchase a certain console to play a certain game, but on the other hand, it diminishes the need to buy a certain console to play a certain game. So...
Unless you're a Nintendo fanboy, and then you're just over the barrel.
Well, it's okay, because the Switch is actually worth buying. Not to say that the Xbox One and the PS4 are terrible systems. There's just not a lot of incentive to purchase them currently. Unless you're really in for a specific game, which I think, as far as exclusives go, the PS4 has the upper hand. But, regardless, Microsoft did have some interesting things. Forza Horizon 4 looks pretty nice. It takes place in Great Britain this time. And it's basically more Forza Horizon, which is perfectly fine with me. I have a good time with that game. It's not a super duper in-depth simulation, but it's a fun arcade game. And there's a changing seasons is the new big thing this time. So I guess as you race along, seasons will change and your car will, you'll be driving a different car through each season, which is kind of interesting. I kind of dig that. That's a interesting gameplay mechanic that I'd be down for, like, trying more often. So, but
we're talking like seasons, winter, autumn, spring, summer, or like correct. Racing seasons.
No. Actual seasons. Like the,
but if it's in Great Britain, isn't it just going to be rain for most of those tracks?
in the summer. Yes. They did show a lot of rain, but it looks really pretty, and I am interested in playing it because it's more Forza, and I like Forza. So it's not really anything groundbreaking, but I have a good time with it. The other thing, and this kind of is what we're making fun of at the beginning of the show, Battletoads. Do you have Battletoads, Ian?
I will soon, presumably, according to the teasers.
Yeah, we don't know much of anything about it, other than it's like hand-drawn 4K graphics, and that's it. But they
hadn't heard the hand-drawn graphics. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. But they did the teaser trailer was literally just text with the ramp in the corner from the speeder bike level of the original Battletoads. With a hand-drawn version of that, with a little wall that you jump over. The teaser trailer did have a great cover of the first level theme from Battletoads, I will say. So
you think they're just going to make a one-to-one remake?
That would be okay with me. I'd be fine with that. It's like DuckTales Remastered, kind of, maybe. Something yeah. along those lines. I would be okay with that.
Whole new generation could break their controllers in half.
Hopefully it will be a little bit more playable than the original.
No.
It's still got to be tough, but I would hope that it's a little more forgiving in certain aspects. So I would be fine with that.
Make them cry. Make them bleed.
Or maybe like have selectable difficulty levels. That would be good too. I'd be okay with that. the big one to come from Microsoft's camp, even though it's not exclusive to the Xbox One, was Cyberpunk 2077, which looks freaking gorgeous and is like right up my alley in terms of the way the game looks. And as far as its aesthetic goes, I don't know how the game plays. It's supposed to be an FPS RPG. It comes to us from the same people that did Witcher 3, CD Projekt Red. And I'm definitely excited for it because CD Projekt Red is one of those game studios that I have a huge amount of respect for and what they strive for and what they do. They also own GOG, which is one of my favorite distribution services because they're just, the way they handle it as far as having everything DRM free and being just really open about everything is excellent. So I am very much interested in Cyberpunk 2077 because, if you're going to give me, like, if your main character drives a car that looks very similar to, like, an 80s Pontiac Trans Am combined with maybe a little bit of DeLorean flair and some other stuff, and you got nice shiny city with fancy lights but a dark seedy underbelly, I'm down. I'm there. I'm there, Ian. I'm super there. It's like if this game can't get any more 80s, and I love it. I love it. And that was it for Microsoft for me. That was what caught my attention mainly.
Next up on our list here is stuff from Bethesda, and since I've never played any of the Fallout series, that seemed to be the main hype.
Sure. I've played a little bit of Fallout 3, and that's about it for me, so I don't really have too much of an investment in what's going on with Fallout, but Fallout 76 sounds interesting.
I know I've seen some hardcore fans grumbling that it's pretty much mandatory online multiplayer, that there is no single player campaign.
Yeah. And I can't blame them for that.
Single player is not true single player, so...
Yeah, I can't blame them for that. I can't blame them for being kind of peeved about that, because Fallout is kind of a solitary experience, really. You're just exploring a wasteland on your own for most of the time, and having a bunch of people there trying to nuke everything sounds kind of harrowing. Doesn't sound like the kind of experience most Fallout players would want. Otherwise, the only other thing that really caught my attention was Doom Eternal, which was, again, just another kind of teaser trailer that didn't show much, but we know what Doom looks like, and I expect it to be more of the same. Doom, the re-release of Doom, or not re-release, the 2016 version of Doom was glorious and amazing, and I want more of it, and it looks like Doom Eternal is more of it. We're going back to Hell on Earth. It's Hell on Earth again. It's Doom 2.
Shoot some things and pick up things to shoot more things.
We got the original Doom, and then you got Doom 2 Hell on Earth. And so Doom Eternal looks like it's basically Doom 2 Hell on Earth, which is just fine. I'm fine with that. Sounds good to me.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. And it,
or in Doom's case, blow it up.
Yeah. Then we got more stuff from Ubisoft. The only thing that I was really interested in was more Trials in the form of Trials Rising. Basically, it looks like it's more Trials, but with really pretty graphics and just more stunt riding, Excitebike-style goodness. This is like what Excitebike would become if they had kept making Excitebike games. Basically, it's like a 2D side-scrolling stunt dirt bike game, and it's great.
It had one of the most entertaining trailers that I saw easily.
Yeah. Yep. It's a lot of fun.
Now, Ubisoft actually had my attention for the most part out of E3 thus far. We'll go ahead and just trot it out there. Beyond Good and Evil 2, still very wary about it.
Yeah. That's kind of that's what I've gotten out of it for a lot of people's reaction.
I mean, I can't in good conscience fault them for making the sequel a prequel. because Metal Gear Solid 3 is a prequel to the entire franchise, and it's arguably the best of the games. So maybe this will be okay, but the scope has me very worried, because the first game got too big for its britches, ran out of time, and really rushed the ending. It's a charming game, lots of neat features. Would love to have seen it fully realized. This one has got me nervous because we don't see a lot of actual gameplay, and the whole going from third-person shooter to flight sim to capital ship sim to interplanetary travel, where's the focus? What's the core of the gameplay, you know?
Right.
And their call out to everyone to submit art and music and writing and whatnot raises a lot of red flags that people have already started going, wait. Because apparently there's like a $50,000 pot that will be split between contributors who are accepted. But everyone is free to submit. So how do they pick? And how do you know whether or not your stuff isn't being used by someone else? And it seems like they're creating this massive, massive world and realize they can't create enough content for it, so they're going for a kind of sketchy slapdash fill-in option. Maybe I'm being paranoid. Maybe I'm being pessimistic, but it
gives me, just hearing about it and what's going on with it, kind of gives me shades of No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
Of, like, things that are, it's just very ambitious, but not very focused.
Yeah.
And I also get that feeling from a game that was not necessarily, I don't think there was any news that came out of E3 about it, but also Star Citizen, which is a game I also feel that way about. It's like, oh boy, the game's scope is huge, and there's a whole enormous universe to explore, and I don't know if it's ever coming out, and if it does, it will probably be disappointing.
Well, you can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get exclusive content as it's still being developed, Kyle.
I know. It's amazing. It's incredible.
Such an option. But
I hope it's worth it.
Now, I remember seeing Starlink last E3 and going, okay, that's pretty neat. That's something right up my alley. Collectible toy stuff. And it's a space flying shooty thing. And it looks kind of neat. I don't know if I'll jump in first thing, which probably means most people won't, so it will die and I will be sad. But, you know, it looks neat. Good on them for trying. And so this trailer starts up. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a thing. That's kind of nice. I'd forgotten about that. And then they start showing the trailer. And the characters under fire, and they're calling for help. And they tap on their radar, and they hear the blip, 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 blip over the comm. I'm going, that sounds like Star Fox. And then, Kyle, it was Star Fox! I will not repeat on the Bumblecast what I said, because this is a family show, but it was Star Fox! Kyle, you can get an R-Wing. Do you know how long I have wanted a physical R-Wing?
Yeah, I'm kind of down with that, to be honest with you. I'm in on that. I don't know if I'll get the game, but I would at least buy a physical R-Wing.
Well, see, the Switch version will come packaged, or they will have a package deal, get the game, get the Fox McCloud pilot, get the R-Wing.
Okay.
So, if you're going to get the R-Wing, you might as well fly around in space with your R-Wing. So,
sure.
Congratulations, you've got me wholesale. You have landed that trout. I am flopping on the shore. Go ahead, slip me open, serve me up for dinner. You have me. I have waited since the N64 for a Star Fox game. We have not gotten a true Star Fox game. Now we're finally going to get it.
I hope so. I know it's a Toys to Life game, right? It definitely looks like it's supposed to be.
Yeah. There's some kind of rig that you connect to your controller and you hook the spaceship onto it.
Yeah, and they're going to be selling more toys, I'm sure, right? That's the plan.
Yeah, there's different ship models, and there are weapons that you can hook onto the ship to change their loadout.
That has me worried, because the Toys to Life, everything about the Toys to Life kind of fell out about a year ago. So,
yeah,
they're really late to the party. I don't know.
Which maybe that means they've got a more viable business, but I don't care as long as I get my R-Wing.
At least an R-Wing to fly around a little bit. Though if you're looking for R-Wing action, just pick up like Bayonetta 2 or something. Come on.
Yeah, but I'd have to make my way to that stage, and then I wouldn't finish the game because I'm playing the same stage over and over again. And
I know. It's just it's interesting. I would be willing to check it out when it comes out, and if I have a Switch at that time, whenever that is, because I'm still behind. Anyway, go ahead.
My only concern is how cumbersome it's going to be to have a big piece of plastic mounted on your controller. You know?
Yeah, that seems like a big pain. And is that like the Joy-Cons? You can't have them attached. Can you play that game like on portable version, or do you have to have the Joy-Con slotted into the thing, and that's the only way you can play it? You can't play with the Pro controller. Is that what they're going with?
I don't know. I would assume you would have to use a Pro controller since it's the closest thing to the PS4 and Xbox's controller. So I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. We'll have to find out.
Yeah.
It comes out in October. I can't wait. Give me. Another one that got me excited was Skull and Bones, the pirate sim, which was basically Ubisoft saying, okay, we get it. Everyone loved the pirate section out of Assassin's Creed 4. We'll just make a whole game out of that, which is what I said back then, and they're doing it, and it looks great.
Yeah, they've been teasing that for a while. I think they looked at Microsoft and Rare with what was their recent pirate game that I'm completely...
Sea of Thieves.
Sea of Thieves. I think they looked at that and went like, yeah, we can do better. Actually, I feel kind of bad for Sea of Thieves because it had a lot of hype behind it. And I think people were excited because it was being developed by Rare, and it's like, guys, you realize that Rare is none of the same people that existed that it was 20 years ago. So temper your expectations a tad.
Okay, I got it wrong initially. It was Assassin's Creed 3 that introduced the ship sailing mechanic. That was the best part of the game.
I thought 4 was it, and that was Black Flag.
No, 4 was, but Black Flag was when they made it the core mechanic of the gameplay.
Okay.
It wasn't just a side thing.
Okay.
And they simplified it a bit, which was a little disappointing, but it was still fun. It was still one of the better games.
Mm-hmm.
And then Assassin's Creed Rogue, which was kind of a spinoff to the spinoffs, was again centered on the ship campaigns, but they simplified it even more and just somehow lost the magic that was from 3 and 4. This looks like it's going very much back to the way 3 did the mechanics and beefing those up.
Yeah.
So, hot diggity, I'm looking forward to that one.
That looks really cool, how you can man different parts of the ship. You'd switch between being the captain or being on deck or manning weapons and stuff like that. It looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely interesting.
Speaking of Assassin's Creed, they showed off the newest one of those, and
it looks really pretty.
See, I was going to say it looked like a step back.
Did it? Oh.
I appreciate the fact that it's very vibrant and colorful and not all the grim and dingy realistic that we've had for so long.
That's the thing I liked about it, was that it was very nice and bright and vibrant.
But I don't know, the models looked kind of wonky and the animations looked jittery. And to me, the world itself looked very claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm just being a graphic snob, which I don't tend to be, but visually it was very off-putting.
My interest and the time I've spent with the Assassin's Creed series is very minimal. So, but it looked interesting. It looked pretty. I didn't mind it so much. I mean, there were certainly better animated games at the show, which I think we'll get to. But it didn't look super bad. But I don't know if I'll ever play it. That's the thing about most of these games. I don't know if I'll ever get the chance to play any of them or get around to playing any of them. But hey,
yeah.
They look pretty.
I want that one and that one and that one. What will you do with them? Yeah. Look at them.
Yeah, it's like the one that I saw at Sony's conference that I liked, but I don't know if I'll ever get the chance to play it. or the prequel to it. I don't know if I ever get the chance to play that either.
And what game is that, my good friend?
Last of Us 2. It looks really good. Ellie is freaking rad as heck.
Yeah, if you've got the stomach to watch it, because...
I didn't mind. It didn't bother me at all. I'm like, yeah. Kill that guy with the throat. Stab him. Yeah. It's freaking awesome.
I mean, I give them full marks for being incredibly realistic. It almost looked like actors.
It's brutal.
It really was visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, she machetes the dude in the neck, and
yeah. You
can hear it wheezing and sputtering, and it's like that.
It is brutal.
I don't like to think of myself as too squeamish, but that's a bit much for me. I mean, there's your Resident Evil level of gore, which is all just messy and gooey and nasty.
It's very cartoony.
Yeah, and then you got Last of Us, where it's like, I feel like I've actually committed murder. I'm pretty sure
that they must have consulted with some people who have actually killed people on that one. Man. yeah, it's pretty brutal. But I was like, dang, this is cool. I want to play this. especially because, I don't know, there's something, Ellie's just an intriguing character, and freaking Ashley Johnson, who plays her, is freaking great. I love Ashley Johnson. She does some really excellent stuff, and just the way she, portrayed Ellie and Ellie's personality and everything is just very, I don't know. I was into it. I wanted to play it, and I haven't even played the first one. And I kind of want to just be like, yeah, forget that one. I just want to play this one on one hand, and on the other hand, well, maybe I should play the other one first. So I'm looking forward to it. What's up?
We've got a female protagonist coming of age using bows and arrows and sneaky, sneaky kill dudes. How would you compare this to the relaunch of the Tomb Raider series?
It looks very similar. I did notice that as well. It's very similar. That's okay, because Tomb Raider also is pretty brutal. Tomb Raider has a bit more, at least Rise of the Tomb Raider has a little bit more of an exploration and some puzzle solving aspects to it that I don't think are really in Last of Us 2. So that's where it gets kind of set apart. But yeah, there's some similarities there.
Okay.
But, and the gameplay style is similar as well. But, I mean, I quite enjoy the rebooted Tomb Raider games, and Last of Us 2 looks also very similar. So, I like it. And I'm going to play it eventually, someday. Maybe when the PS5 or 6 is out, I'll finally play Last of Us 2 Ultra HD Remastered In Your Face Edition. That is like actually like beams in directly into your brain, and I'll play that version.
Maybe by then we'll finally get our Batarang controller that the PS3 promised.
Yes.
Speaking of brutality, you clued me into this conference because I missed it entirely, and
a lot of people
I was not prepared for what I was entering into. So if you missed the Devolver Digital conference, go look it up. Go watch it, because it...
it's very short. It's only 20 minutes long. If you saw the 2017 Devolver Digital conference, if you enjoyed that, I think you will also enjoy this one. It's basically almost a direct continuation of that conference.
It's a... a scathing deconstruction of the entire industry, both consumer and producer.
Yes, it is very much a biting satire on pretty much everything related to video games currently, which I very much enjoyed because I have a lot of criticisms of modern gaming and modern games and modern gamers. And so this is very... very appealing to me, but we won't spoil too much of it. I'd say go watch it for sure. The biggest announcement of it, and my personal favorite announcement of E3 in its entirety, is Metal Wolf Chaos XD, which XD is the emoticon that perfectly sums up Metal Wolf Chaos. I will say.
Yes, it does. And the slogan they have for it is
the hashtag.
I am mad at myself that I laugh that hard at it. Just, oh my God. But I am hyped to have a chance to play Metal Wolf Chaos because it's one of those games that kind of, it sums up kind of like the turn of the millennium anime mecha fighting. It's just, it's the worst possible thing ever. It is the best possible thing ever.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically like, imagine like a bombastic mecha anime combined with the patriotism of Call of Duty. I don't know.
Stuff like it's that. Like G.I. Joe and Gundam Wing got smashed together.
Okay, yeah, okay, there we go. That's a great comparison, I think. That's a great analogy.
Like, I'm honestly not sure if it's self-parody or if it's completely unaware, but it works either way. It's just...
It's very much aware of itself. it's from software. They don't usually make games quite like this. They were very much aware of what they were doing, I think. It's just silly.
It's beautiful.
It is. It truly is glorious. And I can't wait to actually be able to play it because I've been seeing this game for years and been like, yes, yes. And the hashtag, a lot of people, there's a lot of controversy about that hashtag. And I am personally not a huge fan of the person that that tagline is kind of related to. But at the same time, it's part of our culture. It's part of our current pop culture. It's something that we're going to have to kind of accept exists. And I think that tweaking it to make it Mech America Great Again is just, it's perfect. And it got people talking about the game. And it got people talking about it. I think that's the main thing they were going for, was like...
Satire as soon as it was uttered, so
right.
I think it's fine.
Right, and as soon as that showed up, I was like, oh, jeez. Oh, yes! you guys, the marketing department of Devolver Digital is brilliant. Because, I mean, obviously they are. They came up with this whole conference, but yeah, so the most patriotic game ever. Finally comes to America. Yeah. Supposedly it was never released just because the Xbox was kind of on its way out by the time they were ready to release it, or at least considering releasing it. It's very much a Star Fox 2 situation, actually. It was like, well, they were planning on releasing it, but it was almost the end of the life of the Super Nintendo, so why bother?
Right.
So
right.
For Metal Wolf Chaos, they were like, okay, it's the... near the end of the Xbox's lifespan, the Xbox has been an abject failure in Japan, so why even bother ever releasing it? And then it just kind of went away. I do remember a few years ago, Devolver Digital actually reached out to From Software through Twitter, of all things, and said, hey, we'll help you bring Metal Wolf Chaos to the States. We'll help you localize it. And then from there, it was complete radio silence. Nothing ever came of it. But apparently, that actually worked. Apparently, they were able to actually nail something down. And so, Devolver Digital is bringing Metal Wolf Chaos home to America. Richard! I mean, Ian!
Kyle!
What's next?
Hilariously, the last show we recorded, there was rumors that there might be a remake of Tales of Vesperia on the way.
Mm-hmm.
From Bandai Namco. The day after we recorded the show, they announced Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition was coming to the Xbox One and the PS4. So, haha, yay. Oh, and the Switch. I forgot. It's cross-platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be on PC, too.
And, oh, but everything.
Yes.
And it's going to have everything that the PS3 version had, plus all the DLC. It is going to just be chock full of good stuff, and it's one of the better Tales of games. So if you haven't played any of them, definitely worth picking up. It's got one of the best main protagonists. Yuri is definitively an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Some fantastic music, some interesting themes brought up in the story that kind of fall flat at the end, but that's okay. It's a JRPG. You got to kill the giant god boss anyway.
I'm down. I mean, I still own it for Xbone or for Xbox 360 and have not played very much of it. But hey, maybe I'll pick this one up because it's on PC and it's the definitive edition. So I don't need to be like, oh man, I never get that content that I missed out on.
From Kojima's Madhouse, whatever that production company is.
Kojima Productions.
No, that's owned by...
Oh, right. Okay, you're right. Never mind. You are correct.
I forget what he's got called now, but point is, we saw more of Death Stranding. We got a peek at what might be gameplay with the whole traversing the landscape to deliver different stuff, which was kind of interesting. And it looked kind of neat in a wilderness traversal game, but in terms of understanding what's going on...
That doesn't sound like the game you're going to understand, Ian. You might as well just buckle up. You might as well just be like, well, this game is going to be completely nonsensical.
Yeah. It really feels like they took all the restraints off of Kojima. He took off his weighted clothing. He's out of the hyperbolic time chamber. He's ready to show us what he's really made of.
Which may not be a good thing. Ironically,
it's a visually stunning game. I'll give it that.
Yeah. Ironically, restrictions on certain visionary developers might actually be the thing that makes them make great games. Giving them free rein to just do whatever they want may actually result in things that are a little bit weird and out there and probably not what you want. But I'm interested in seeing where they go with it. But
I'm interested to watch from afar.
Sure,
to see what happens.
Sure. Yeah. But I said last episode, though, the gameplay is kind of pedestrian. And the little bit of gameplay we saw, it's just kind of standard video game fare. I think people expecting this to be a mind-blowing video game experience and might be a little disappointed. So, but we'll see.
Next up, we've got the new Spider-Man game, who's being developed by somebody I don't remember.
It looks good.
They've been showing this off for, what, 2 years now? Three?
I think it's been 2 years. It might be only one. It might have been last year they announced it, but I think they announced it before then.
And yeah, it looks nice, but I came away from it going, eh?
Yeah.
It looks like Insomnia. They're still building off the Spider-Man 2 GameCube game, which was the best Spider-Man game. There's no argument there. But it feels like anything that isn't the most basic beat-em-up, you know, hair trigger button mash is super cinematic or full cinematic. And that's, I don't know, that doesn't really get me. That doesn't grab me.
Right. Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. I don't know how interested I am in this game too much. It looks good. It looks pretty. But it's like, at the same time, can they really make it its own? So, but it's Insomniac Games as the developer. So.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
I mean, Peter's voice acting and characterization are spot on. They're fantastic.
Right.
But
yeah, I mean... The whole world of it is really nice, and it looks really good. They're capturing the character and the look and everything perfectly. It's just the gameplay might be kind of eh. Insomniac also did Sunset Overdrive, which is kind of similar, I would say. So that could be interesting.
Yeah. I would imagine there'd be at least some nod in there somewhere.
We'll have to see. And I think we're finally to the big one, Ian.
the one that kind of stole the show.
Sure. Unless you're not into Smash Brothers, and then you were like, eh? If you're not into Smash Brothers, you're like,
there was other stuff. We'll talk about that other stuff before
okay,
we get to.
Okay. There was a little bit of other Smash. Stuff, but man, Smash was like dominating.
It was pretty much we know what you're here for, so here. But
yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. All right. Should I mention my thing first before we get into
go for it.
Stuff? Okay. These were not officially announced at the within the Nintendo Direct, but there's a development studio called Hamster that has been doing Arcade Archive releases of games on the Switch. You may have seen a few of them. One of them is the original arcade version of Mario Brothers. Not Super Mario Brothers, Mario Brothers, the original multi-platform single-screen game where you have to kind of destroy all enemies in the area to move on. It's like the minigame of Mario 3.
Beat up them crabs and turtles.
Exactly. That game, I don't think the arcade version had ever been properly re-released before until then. And now they're bringing two more arcade classics that have never been properly re-released until now. Actually, one of them has never been released at all. The Arcade Archives is bringing us Donkey Kong, the original full arcade version that's never once ever been ported to a home system. Never been at all. We've had remakes, we've had different code. We've had the NES version. It's usually the NES version that gets re-released, but never the original arcade version. So that's finally out on the Switch officially for the first time. Apparently, a lot of it comes down to the fact that a big portion of the game was not developed by Nintendo. It was actually outsourced to a third party, and there have been a lot of legal issues surrounding that code. So Nintendo actually had never... Nintendo hasn't owned the original Donkey Kong in full, like, ever. It's weird.
Wow.
It's very weird. It's a very crazy story.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, I definitely recommend looking up more info on it, because it's kind of crazy to think that Nintendo doesn't own Donkey Kong, like, carte blanche. It's crazy. So that's the reason why that game had been, like, that version of the game had been, like, so shrouded in mystery and so, like, they never touched it. It was always, like, ports of the NES version. The other interesting one, I think, would be Sky Skipper. Was never released to the arcades. It's kind of a... It's similar to Defender in that you're flying around in a plane and you have to rescue... stuff on the ground. Usually it's like bunny rabbits and princesses and stuff. And there are gorillas that are on the ground, giant gorillas on the ground that are trying to attack you, and you have to drop bombs on them. It's a very simple game. It's a cute game. And it never officially got a release, and there's only one arcade cabinet in existence, and it's in Nintendo's headquarters in Seattle. So they
what
had to, so they had to actually, in order to get the ROM for this game, they had to go into Nintendo's headquarters, dismantle the machine, and dump the ROM off the one existing Sky Skipper machine in order to port the game to the Switch, in order to get it playable on the Switch. So, yeah, it's one of those lost Nintendo arcade games that I don't think anybody's really gotten the chance to play before. So
confirmed for Smash.
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be cool. They have like an assist, Sky Skipper assist trophy. Just do it. Just throw the sprite in there. Why not? But it's really cool. It's a really cool looking game. I'm really excited that both of these lost arcade classics are finally coming out somewhere else other than just the arcade. It's good stuff. I like it a lot.
For me, I think something that bothers me is there was no Metroid Prime 4 news.
Mm-hmm, yeah. A glaring
omission.
They
announced it last year, so where is it?
I'm guessing that they announced it last year and went, oh crap, we've actually got to make it. And a year has passed and they're like, we don't really have a whole heck of a lot we're showing, so maybe we'll wait. Here's the thing about Nintendo, though, is that Nintendo's not necessarily beholden to E3 as the only time they can announce anything. So maybe in a few months, we'll see more on Metroid Prime 4.
A full-on Metroid Direct would be lovely.
Indeed.
What we did get teased last year and got to see a bit this year was the new Fire Emblem mainline title, Three Houses.
Which is a horrible title.
Why?
Three Houses. Is this the Three Little Pigs? Is that what we're going for here? Is that is this Fire Emblem Three Little Pigs? Is one house made of straw, one made of wood, and one made of brick? What's going on here,
no,
Ian?
No, think more Game of Thrones. Noble houses. Houses of great command or ill repute.
Okay. I get it now.
I will say, though, I had to watch the trailer a second time because I thought the main female character was named Edgelord, and I'm like, what? I know they can be kind of funny with the names, but what?
Can you change the name of the main character in the game? Do you know yet? I know you usually can. If you don't make a female character, name her Edgelord. If you don't name her Edgelord when you play this game, man, I'm going to be sorely disappointed.
I don't think there's a ton of details out just yet, but one of the most intriguing things to me is what looks like, number one, you're not just commanding your army of anime characters, but it looks like you might also have battalions or platoons at their command might be themed to their weapon, and it looks like you can change their formation. And given the whole, you know, triangle, axe, sword, spear, and such that's been throughout the series, I'm wondering if your battalion formation will be something like that. Like, will one formation have the advantage over another one? Can you defend against a formation that you're not prepared for? I mean, how will it be applied? It's really interesting.
Yeah, there's a bit more depth to it, it looks like. I also noticed that in the battle scenes in the background, there's actually like war going on, which we've never been able to really see before. So I think that's pretty neat and adds another extra layer of detail to the world. So it's interesting. I still think Three Houses is a weird name for a game, but whatever, it's fine.
It doesn't quite grab you like Fates or Awakening, but it's descriptive.
It seems like a step down. It's like Awakening. We've awakened. Yay. Fates. It's the fate of the world. It's the fate. And then Three Houses. It's like, whoa, okay. Here's Three Houses. Enjoy. Have fun with your Three Houses. One made of straw, one made of wood, and one made of brick. Have fun.
Introducing the new realtor sim within the Fire Emblem.
It would be funny if there were a realtor in the game, like not as a playable character, but someone trying to sell you stuff. Sell you a house.
Be Anna.
Someone selling you a house. Of course it would be Anna.
Also shown off was Octopath Traveler, and I'm so glad they kept that name. It's just so silly.
Yeah, going from a kind of bland name to one that's a very silly and a fun. It's a fun name, Octopath Traveler. It's good. It's descriptive. I mean, you're a traveler. There's eight different paths. Hey, it's perfect.
Now, I haven't played the new demo, but I did play the original demo, and it was fun for a very retro-style RPG. I can see where it would be too slow-paced for a lot of people, and I did feel like some of the visual effects were a little distracting. Mm-hmm. A little too much bloom here and there, but overall, for a kind of relaxing, you know, walk through the dungeon, kill the dudes, grab the loot type of experience, I liked it just fine. So I'm looking forward to it, and I like the idea that the current demo saves your progress and will apply it to the full game when you get it.
Yeah, and I think the full game is like just around the corner. It's coming out very soon.
Yep.
It's by the same developers as Bravely Default, isn't it?
Yep, okay. Which was a spectacular new take on the classic RPG formula. If you haven't played the Bravely series, highly recommend it.
Yeah.
It's all the fun old school stuff, but modernized so that it's not a complete slog.
Yeah, that's kind of how it looked to me. And I'm like, huh, that's kind of interesting. Maybe I'll give that one a try one of these years.
I mean, for me in the Bravely series, the best feature is you can scale the random encounters.
Right. That's very intriguing to me too, because that's one thing I always am like, just like, I get frustrated with random battles.
Yeah. So if you want to explore the dungeon and you don't want to, you know, get attacked by a Zubat every three steps, turn them off.
Right.
Turn off the random camps. Or you finish the boss, but now you have to go back through the dungeon. You don't want to get punked three steps out, so turn them off.
Right.
But if you're underleveled, max it out so that you can't breathe getting ambushed, and just go through it really fast. It's just such a good way of doing it.
Right.
And the music in the first game is just unparalleled. I'm hoping Octopath will have a few tracks like that, because the demo's music was serviceable, but nothing really memorable.
Mm. That's a shame. We'll see.
But speaking of RPGs with funky soundtracks, World End With You is coming to the Switch.
Yeah, which is interesting, because that game relies heavily on the dual screen, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was bringing it up for, is because it was a 3DS exclusive.
Yeah.
No, excuse me, DS.
Yeah, DS.
Yeah. And the whole gimmick was your main character was on the top screen controlled by the left-hand controls, while the other party member was on the bottom screen, who either controlled by the right-hand buttons or by the touchpad. And both of them were active at the same time. As an active combat system. So you had to work really quick to keep up with everything. The Switch does not have two screens. So unless you play it off the TV and the portable touchpad, I don't know how they're going to make it work.
Yeah.
And none of the preview stuff has said, okay, this is how we're adapting it to a brand new console. They pointed out that it's getting an additional campaign, which is neat. More content is always cool, but how is it going to play?
Hmm. Maybe it's one of those games you have to turn the Switch vertically and they have the screen split down the middle or something. I don't know.
Oh, that'd be kind of funky.
Yeah, but then again, you wouldn't be able to play it on TV that way then. So I don't know. I don't know. I know you can play, actually, since Donkey Kong and Skyskipper both have, like, really tall screens, you can actually flip them to the side and play the games with the screen vertically as well.
So, that's neat.
And I think a lot of the arcade shooters that are on the Switch, like Ikaruga, you can also flip them to the side and have that long vertical screen that arcade games generally have. So I like that. That's cool. But I don't know. Maybe World Ends With You will do something similar.
And finally, the elephant in the room.
We're at the big one, yep.
The one that Nintendo said, here you go, have all of it.
Yep. Demon X Machina.
Smash Brothers!
Okay, that one. We'll go with that.
So, how about Dan Ridley?
How about him? He sure is big. He sure did freaking skewer Mario.
No, he skewered Mega Man. He crushed Mario's head.
No. He skewered both of them. But man, I have not seen Mario that brutally impaled in my life. It's like, holy crap, they're really going for the alien vibe on this one. They're not really holding back their inspiration for Metroid at all.
Yeah. So,
it's pretty cool. Yeah, and pretty cool. I'm cool with Ridley being involved. It's fine.
Looking at the gameplay, he looks like he's a very high risk, high reward type of guy.
Yeah, he's very brutal.
Very brutal. So really jazzed to play with him. Daisy is in the roster. Welcome Daisy at long last.
I'm glad to see Daisy. I love Daisy. I know people are annoyed with her, but what people are annoyed by Daisy about is the things I like about her, so I'm down. I'm down with Daisy. She's a clone of Peach, and that's perfectly fine because, hey, it's Daisy.
Now, here's the thing that bugs me about the Echo character term that they've coined for this.
Sure.
So Daisy's an Echo of Peach. Okay, cool. Lucina is a Echo of Marth. All right, cool. Sure, fine. But where do you draw the line? I mean, Luigi was pretty close to Mario at first, but he's diverged enough that his timing is different, his moveset is different enough. You say that they're individual characters.
Sure.
Ganondorf, by what I've seen of the gameplay, finally seems to be distinctive enough that he isn't a complete Captain Falcon clone anymore.
Sure.
But what about Falco and Wolf, who are functionally almost identical to Fox? It's just, you know, speed and damage output that are slightly different.
Well, it's hard to say what they've changed too, though. We don't know what they've changed in this version that maybe separates them more or anything like that. I don't know.
But I mean, what about Pichu versus Pikachu. They have the same movesets. It's just Pichu takes damage from all of his B attacks.
Well, we also don't know what they've changed about Pichu since he was in Melee. So maybe they've made him. Maybe they've changed his and or her movesets. Maybe.
I'm indignant if they don't at least label Dr. Mario an Echo character, because I've always been bugged that he's just Mario, but with the pills. Come on.
Yeah. I've always been like, why isn't Dr. Mario just a costume for Mario with like his fireballs replaced with pills or whatever? I don't quite understand why Dr. Mario is his own thing, but whatever. It's not a big deal. It's just kind of silly.
Hey, we got the whole roster back.
Yeah.
That was a heck of a reveal. I love how they tried that one out.
It's like, Snake, hey, Snake, what's up? And then, oh, everyone's here. Okay, cool. Too bad Snake didn't go, kept you waiting, huh?
I know. And when David Hayter confirmed that he's returning as the voice on Twitter, he didn't say it either. It's like, come on, man, you love the character. You should missed opportunity.
Yeah.
But I also love the way that they paced it, because the minute, they show off Cloud and Ryu, it's like, oh, hey, they got those guys back. I am a little surprised. They got Snake back. Well, if Snake's back, then what's stopping anybody else? Oh, wait, no, everybody's back. Oh, okay.
Plus Ridley. Plus Inklings.
They haven't said, but it almost seems like they might have all the stages back as well. Maybe?
That seems likely. I just based on calling it Ultimate, seems to me, but like, okay, all stages, all characters, everything's here. All the music, everything. They brought back the N64 tracks, the music tracks. I'd be like, yeah, I'm down. Yeah. They brought back Big Blue, which is great. I love that stage.
Oh, yeah,
fantastic. Especially because it's, it's Big Blue. It's got great music.
And if we do get all the stages back, I look forward to the absolute acid trip that would be Ridley and Polka Floats.
Very weird. I'm also hoping that they have some sort of story mode, even if it's a fairly simple one. It would be nice to have something like Subspace Emissary again, even along those lines. It would be good. I would like to see interactions between these characters beyond just the trailer, the character reveal trailers and stuff.
Shoot, what if they bring back everything? The classic style adventure mode, the way Melee had it, the way Brawl had it, board game that nobody played. Just everything. Ultimate.
That 3DS mode that I can't remember the name of, but was better than the one in the Wii U version. Yeah, if they just had like everything, if they're bringing back every character, hopefully they're bringing back everything too. So we'll see.
Now, what I'm curious about is Palutena and the Mii Fighters specifically. When they showed off Palutena, they showed that her down B is both a reflect and a guard, or counter, I should say. So does that mean they've kind of wrapped all of her variable moves into her moveset and just dropped some? Or are we going to get the customizable movesets like in Smash 4? Or how is it going to work? I mean, one of the big things about the Mii Fighters was being able to customize their playstyle. So are they going to just pick the ones that most users used, or what are we going to do? Are we going to have like Echo Gunner, Echo Sword, Echo Brawler? I'm going to get it anyway. I mean, I was sold from the get go, but tell me, I want more.
I don't know. It's intriguing. I'm interested in what they're going to do with it. Someone else was revealed that I can't think now.
Bomberman is an assist trophy?
Yes, that's it. Thank you. Yeah, Bomberman is an assist trophy, which is really cool. I would like to see him as a full character, but an assist trophy is nice. Waluigi apparently is a huge deal now, and people are really mad that he got snubbed as an assist trophy only and isn't a full character, Which I mean, I'd be down with Waluigi to be a full character, but I don't think that's any reason to go harass people to put Luigi in the game. It's like,
I sympathize with crazy. The Waluigi fans, it, only insofar as that Daisy got in,
sure,
as an Echo. So having Waluigi as just an assist trophy, I can get where some of the salt comes from there.
But at the same time, Daisy has been more of an integral part of the series of Mario since 89, since the original Mario Land. So,
I don't know. I think it's arguable. I would say that maybe Waluigi's shown up more as a presence within the sports games than Daisy has in general, but I don't know. We would need a Mario expert on that.
I think Daisy has made more appearances than Waluigi. Maybe only just, but still. And hey, she was the princess in the Super Mario Brothers movie. That's got to count for something, right? Yeah. Right? I love that movie. Don't hate.
So
it's bad, but I love it.
Smash Brothers website.
Yes.
If we are to assume that the two empty slots after Ridley are all we're getting in terms of new characters, and that's a huge assumption that could be based on absolutely nothing, but work with me here.
Sure.
We're getting a gigantic roster anyway. Sakurai said, don't expect too many newcomers, which I think is absolutely fair.
That's given fine. What we're
being presented. But, you know, we've got that bottom row with room for two more characters after Ridley. So place your bets, Kyle. Who do you think the two newcomers might be?
I want it to be Shovel Knight and Shantae. Will it be? Probably not. But that's what I want. Who do you think it'll be?
I would be very, very surprised if Springman / Ribbon Girl wasn't one of the newcomers.
Yes, yes. That's one thing I did hear, was there's like no arms representation in what they've revealed so far. So, yeah, I would be fine with that.
I mean, if they're regulated to just assist trophies, I will be very surprised, but I'm certain we'll be getting a reveal of them before the game comes out.
Mm-hmm.
As for the final slot,
it won't be Twintel, sadly, even though she would be the best one.
Or Max Brass.
Let's not joke around here. We need our twins. We need Twintel. Make it happen, Nintendo.
As for the last one, it's either going to be something old school obscure, because Sakura likes doing that.
There's not much they can go back to, though. They've mined a lot of that stuff.
What if it was like the dude from Donkey Kong, Exterminator fellow? What's his name?
Oh, Stanley the Bugman?
Yeah.
He has one move. He would not be very good.
They put Duck Hunt as a character, okay?
Well, they had things to go off of. Stanley the Bugman, all he does is jump and spray. That's all he does.
So work in some other, like, give him Balloon Fighter's hat, like...
I don't think he would have quite the same appeal. He's a fine assist trophy, but I don't think he would be a good full character. I'm trying to think.
Could be yet another Fire Emblem representative, because that just seems to be something that Smash does, and we do have a new Fire Emblem game on the way.
Yeah, but I kind of hope not, because we really have enough Fire Emblem. This is not Fire Emblem Fighters. we don't need that, do we?
I'm just saying what I'm expecting.
Sure, you know? Sure.
Not what I want, what I think is reasonable, or at least viable.
Mm-hmm.
Presumable? Or a representative from Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
That's not impossible. What about Popeye? If we're going back to old Nintendo stuff. You could just have Popeye in there.
See, I'd say
it would not have. It won't have. I don't think it'll happen.
We have Snake and Cloud and Ryu, so maybe.
I don't think we get Popeye, because they've... The owners of Popeye are very protective of him and do not want him used for like anything. So, I doubt it, but it's kind of interesting because Popeye is such an integral part of Nintendo's like pre-NES business that you would think that there would be something related to Popeye that would appear in Smash, but yeah, I don't know. It'd be an interesting trophy to have not even an assist trophy, just to be like, yeah, here's Popeye. We're going to acknowledge the fact that Nintendo actually like made games based on Popeye for a couple years. Trying to think who else could appear. Jeez, Nintendo's running out of IPs to represent.
Yeah.
They're really running out. Could be another F-Zero representative. I don't know who exactly it would be. Maybe Samurai Goro.
Maybe take away the assist trophy. I don't know.
Maybe Jody Summer. I don't know.
I'm also hoping that we'll get costumes, and I don't just mean palette swaps, but I mean full-on new character model type stuff like Alf does to Olimar. I want Octolings for the Inkling.
Yeah.
And I want a Ken and Dan skin for Ryu.
That would be cool, yeah. To have actual proper Ken and Dan for Ryu. Heck, throw Makoto in there too, why not?
And last thought is, what are they going to do to differentiate Young Link and Toon Link?
Give them a different voice.
Nah. Because, I mean, it made sense that Young Link was phased out for Toon Link, because they were very different representations of the franchise, but you still had Big Link and then Small Lighter Link. And now we have two Small Lighter Links, so...
How do they differentiate them in Hyrule Warriors? Do you remember?
Well, that's kind of apples and oranges, but in Hyrule Warriors, Young Link is... I would say arguably a little heavier in his combos, in his swings. And Toon Link is more aerodynamic, I guess. Because Toon Link has this wonderful downward chop thingy that can be abused to just slaughter entire rooms. Whereas Young Link, I feel like, is more like you build him up to just unleash the fierce deity mask. Unless that's just my own bias, maybe.
Young Link.
I don't know.
Maybe for Young Link, they'll will do more to go the Majora's Mask route and have the mask as what differentiates him. Have it like the mask mechanic.
I'd be down for overhaul of the character.
So something like that. But I don't know. I don't know. Could be interesting. Maybe they're just clones. Who knows?
All right. I think we have exhausted this line of discussion.
I believe
so. E3 was fun. Looking forward to what's coming out.
Yep. It's kind of a... It was a very understated E3, I would say. Maybe a little boring in certain parts for certain publishers, but... Overall, there's some interesting stuff coming out that I think should keep us busy for quite a while. Are we ready to get into Q&A?
Let's get into the Q&A. If you want to ask me or Kyle anything, head over to Twitter and tweet to @Bumblecast or with the hashtag Bumblecast. Email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com. Comment in the YouTube videos. If you're a patron, comment somewhere on the Patreon page. It's real easy to get in touch with us.
Yeah, we're here. We're here, and we're ready to listen to your questions, or to read them, whichever, however you want to do it.
And because I've gotten this question repeatedly between episodes, you do not have to pay anything to ask us a question. You are free to ask us anything you want, anytime you want. It's just the patrons who, by priority, get to bump to the head of the line.
Right.
There is no... paywall to ask anything. Ask whatever you want, please.
Yes,
just throw it at us. It's just those who can spend that little bit extra to get their question answered sooner do so. That's all there is to it.
Yes,
you don't have to pay. It's just some people choose to pay to get to the head of the line.
And also keep in mind that it's kind of at our discretion which questions get in, which ones don't. Some of them are, a lot of them are repeats that have already been asked before. So if you're wondering if your question has been asked, we do have the lists on each episode on YouTube where you can see which questions have been asked. I think, Ian, are you still working on getting through that? Or
yeah, season 2 and season 3 still need work, but 1 and 4 are up to date.
Okay, so if you're wondering if your question's been asked or if a question previously has been asked before, check out the episode, the previous episodes, and see, just in case. We do get a lot of repeat questions, and that's fine, but just know that we're not going to necessarily be wasting time talking the same questions again and again and again and again. So, first priority Q&A question comes from none other than our good buddy Scruffy Matt.
Howdy, Scruffy.
If you could put any of the comics characters, either Archie or IDW, in a Team Sonic Racing, who would you like to play as?
Oh, goodness.
Team Sally Cole here.
I don't know. I'd kind of like Eclipse.
That could be fun.
Be tossed in there. Since it seems like the game uses wisps for weapons, it'd be really neat if anything he picked up became a Dark Arms variant on the weapon, just as a little visual thing. For a current run, Tangle seems like the obvious choice.
That's who I was going to say next, obviously.
But since there is a big emphasis on teamwork in the game, having Rough and Tumble in there with any kind of unique banter, if they're on the same team, would be equally delightful.
That would be cool. They're official Sega characters, but I would love to see Beat and Bark as a team come in there. I'm trying to think who else. I think any of the Freedom Fighters would be really cool to just acknowledge them. Who else? Cassia and Clove. That could be an interesting duo.
Put in Thunderbolt, who has the unique thing that if anybody attacks Eggman, she automatically gets an aggro or a weapon.
I don't know who to pair Conquering Storm with, but she would be great. I don't know. There's really not too many characters who I would be like, no, don't put them in there. I'd just be like, yeah, throw them all in, every single one. I don't know. What do you think, Ian? You got any more you'd really want to see?
Those are the ones I think would be the most fun to toss, you know, into a battle racer cart type game.
Sure.
I mean, those are the ones that spring to mind, at least.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And getting into the standard Q&A, we got one from James. Ian, what are your plans for IDW Sonic going forward, well beyond its first year, and how sticks the Badger involved in them?
I can't talk about that.
Is Styx the Badger involved in them? You can't talk about that.
Well, I want her to be, but that's up to Sega.
Okay.
Yeah. Everything is up to Sega. So,
speaking of characters that should be in Team Sonic Racing,
absolutely right. I am ashamed I didn't think of Styx.
Styx not in, well, she's not a comic character originally. Yeah, so,
she was in the Boom comic. That counts.
But still, I mean, well, she's not originally a comic character.
You hush.
You didn't make her up. Don't try and take credit. But she would be great. I would love to have Styx in Team Sonic Racing too. I just want Styx. Styx should be in everything. She should just be like the crossover character to be in everything. She should just show up in Marvel Comics like, hey, what's up? This is weird. What am I doing here?
Getting back to James's question, I am in the process of proposing what's going to happen after year one. And I know generally where I would like to take it after that, but all of that hinges on editorial approval and on Sega's approval. So at this point, I can't even tease or throw out a knowing smile. Everything is in pre-production approval process. So even I don't know what's coming.
But there are plans for beyond the first year, so that's good news.
Oh, shoot, I got plans that could go out for the next 10.
Well, I know, but the publisher is at least planning on going past the first year.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, the publisher and the licensor. Next question comes from Lucario Ocarina. A question for both Ian and Kyle. What are your favorite movie genres, and what do you love most about them? The writing, acting, tone, etc.?
I usually get all the questions, so Kyle, you go first.
Action movies tend to be where I live. I don't know. Good action thrillers are good. Action with comedy elements is always a good time. Well, usually a good time. I like some comedies, but comedy can be really tough and it's very subjective. So like a lot of modern comedies don't really appeal to me all that much. I find documentaries to be kind of interesting if they're on a topic that I like. So, but it kind of depends. Sometimes they're kind of boring, but I did enjoy The King of Kong, which has certain implications now that we know a little bit more about Billy Mitchell and what he was actually doing behind the scenes to get his suspect scores in Donkey Kong. But otherwise, I don't know. That's really my main things. I'm just trying to think of, like, I don't know. I'm even okay with, like, certain bad movies. Like, I mentioned Super Mario Brothers movie before, which I love that movie. It's terrible. It's not a good movie, but I love it. There's something about it that's just... Something about it is just appealing to me, even if it's, like, not a great movie. I don't know. I'm a big Mystery Science Theater fan, so I do have an appreciation for the not-so-great movies. I do like sci-fi movies, but sometimes they get kind of dumb. they crawl kind of up there. Like when they crawl up their own butt and just get so freaking, like, esoteric and ridiculous, I get taken out of it. And the same thing goes for fantasy movies. Like, high fantasy, like, medieval fantasy style movies. I just kind of get like, okay, I get it. You think you're so cool with this fantasy world, but you're not really that cool. You're not Lord of the Rings, so don't even bother trying. So it kind of depends. How about for you, Ian?
See, I've been struggling with this one because I don't really know how to define it. It's like, what do I actually pay money to go see at the theater, and what do I have on my shelf? And it's mostly, I guess, action fantasy stuff, and I'm using that in the broadest way possible.
Right.
You've got Star Wars, you've got Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
You've got the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy, which I know has its problems, but I can watch any of those movies unironically and really enjoy them.
Yes.
For all the hints of possible lore and all that stuff. And,
mm-hmm.
The Marvel movie catalog all kind of fall into that kind of action fantasy, whether or not it's a more grounded film, so to speak,
sure,
like the Captain Americas or the more out there stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy. They all kind of fit into that general escapist fantasy with some humor and some things exploding in some way.
I think we both have the same taste in movies,
more or less,
like action sci-fi, action fantasy, action, like some action thriller stuff I kind of get into a little bit, but I think we really do just have very similar tastes, which is fine.
I really don't like saying animated movies because anything can be animated.
Sure.
Animation is a medium. It is.
Right.
But a lot of that comes down to the technique.
Mm-hmm.
Like watching any of the Miyazaki films, just imagining the time and effort that went into rendering the art that it is. And just seeing, you know, the way that he'll animate, or his studio will animate, you know, wind rippling through the grass. It's like, how do you do that? How do you look at a page and say, okay, I'm going to render this effect over multiple pages with, I wish my brain could work in that fashion, that I could see things that way. It's just, it's jaw dropping. Or, you know, some of the Pixar stuff, or the way CG cartoon movies have been going.
Right.
Having an inkling and understanding of how things are rendered and built, you know, like the way that the water was animated in Moana. The movie itself left me a little tepid. It was like, all right, it was cute. It was all right. But the water, Kyle, the way that they rendered the water was just, the way that the light filters through it. And, oh my God, just, how do you do that? How do you tell the computer, make this happen this way?
Yeah, the technical aspects of animated movies, I definitely love too. I would agree with you there.
And some of the classic Disney stuff, maybe it's not aged as well, but the quality of the painting in some of these backgrounds is just jaw-dropping. It's And then, of course, it's the stories and the characterization as well that I greatly enjoy.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of that nostalgia factor to it, too, but it still holds. Sure. A lot of it still holds up. It's like watching, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which actually is 30 years old this week. That movie, it's a fantastic movie. The movie is great, but there's also that technical aspect of it. It's like, holy crap, how did they pull this off? And it still holds up. It still looks great 30 years later. Like, man, this movie is like timeless, which is crazy to say for an animated movie that's 30 years old.
Well, kind of along that lines, the original live-action Ninja Turtles movie.
That too, yes.
I mean, going back to it, the animatronic lip sync is laughably bad.
Yeah.
But when you think about what kind of gear these guys were wearing and the martial arts that they are performing while wearing these suits is astonishing. And I think that movie still holds up, rose-tinted glasses aside, because of the story and the personal interplay between the characters. I mean, the cast does an excellent job of portraying these individuals in a setting. They're not distracted by the fact that this is a turtle movie about talking turtles, where right. I think the second and third film got distracted by that very aspect. It's like, hey, look, it's the wacky turtles in these wacky situations. The first film was a story about a family coming under attack and forging stronger bonds for it.
Right. Well, the first film takes a lot of aspects from the comics, too.
Yeah, more
so than anything else, which I think also really helps it to stand out versus taking more inspiration from the cartoons, which is what the latter movies did. Which is, on one hand, I can understand, and that's fine because the cartoon was the thing that caused the Ninja Turtles to blow up into the huge cultural phenomenon that they are, but at the same time, there was a lot more depth in the first movie that I think really makes it stand out. And also, it's the fact that it's like one of the most, the highest grossing independent film of all time still, I think. It's pretty close to it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they were able to pull it off being an independent movie, and they were able to pull off that level of the level of detail and the level of just the level of everything that they pulled off with that was pretty incredible. So,
and I'd also draw a comparison between early Pixar stuff and more recent Pixar stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what really made Pixar stand out early on, never mind the technical prowess, was how heartfelt and character driven their movies were.
Yeah.
And I feel like that more recent films have been almost callous in the way that they're going for the gut punches and pulling those heartstrings. Granted, I haven't seen Coco. I haven't seen Incredibles 2 yet. I really want to. But it started to get to the point where it's like, okay, this is where the orchestral music swells and we have the eye shimmer going on. And maybe it's because I've seen so many. Maybe I've gotten too critical in the way I consume my media. But I feel like the earlier stuff was telling stories earnestly, and it's gotten to the point where it's somewhat self-aware. It's like, okay, here is the moment where we're going to make everyone in the theater cry, and we're going to get that Oscar nomination, and everyone's going to take animation seriously for a while.
Right.
And it's almost and there's nothing wrong with, you know, aiming for that, but at the same time, there's an organic way to do it, and then there's a kind of pandering way to do it.
Sure. It's almost a trope of Pixar movies at this point for...
Yeah.
For at least for... like stuff outside of like Cars and probably Incredibles. I'm not sure, but I don't think they quite hit on that aspect of things in the Incredibles. At least I hope not. It's a superhero movie. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on.
Yeah. All right. And our last question comes from SonicFizz77. If you were to adapt Team Sonic Racing into the comics, what would it be like? Would it be something like Sonic Universe number 45, or something like the Champions arc, or something else?
I legit cannot answer that question at this point.
Okay.
Don't get too excited by that. Things are always moving and shifting, but I legit cannot approach that question right now.
Okay. So what you're saying is You're not saying anything. I won't say.
Yeah, this isn't even knowing smile to kind of shrug and we'll see. I don't know.
Right. But it could yeah. I won't say anything either because then that'll
leave
be
it at that. Let's leave
yeah
it at
yeah
that.
That'll be taken to, so just know things okay, know things as in K-N-O-W things, at least know something, like know that you're alive.
Hey, you know what would be great? Let's give a shout out to all our patrons that make this show possible.
Do that, Ian, before this train wreck continues.
Choo choo. Big thank you to Eric F, Daniel H, Alex P, Saturn Flicky, Brando Fatoller, Scruffy Mad, Chris A, John B, Sam Cybercat, Mike B, Samuel P, Jennifer R, David C, Revan the Light, Lisa M, AE Double, Brody M, Neil H, Damo, Justin S, Justin G, Connell T, Mike Dawson, Adam T, Silly Street, Carl, Michael A, Q, Lee H, K, Chevelle, Dunn B, Sin Fritz, Hako, El Gato Comics, John M, Savardovich 9X, James K, Tick Tick, Papa Trip, Padapa, Dipa, 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 Overthinking Films, Adam BT, and Ron.
Yay! Thank you, Ron. And everybody else. Thank you, everybody else. And Ron.
Oh, and I forgot to mention on a previous show, should have done this earlier, patron Papadabba KKM. Big shout out to them for getting a little bit of art in Cosmo number 5.
Oh, cool. Excellent. I have that sitting on my desk to read right now, so maybe I should get on that.
When you get to the very retro gamey scene, you'll know exactly what it is. I think it's an actual screenshot of an actual game. That's them, so big kudos to them for getting in.
Cool. Very nice.
Kyle, where can people find you when the show is over?
You can head on over to Twitter at KyleJCRB, where I've been fairly active. If you hit me up there, I will respond to you. I don't always like tweet out things, but I'm paying attention to it, so you can hit me up there. You can also find me at KNGO.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast in MP3 format, as well as archived episodes of my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which also streams live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right there at kngi.org, where you can find all that goodness. You can find it all and listen to it all, and there's a lot more other shows there for you, too. It's a big network of KNGI podcasts, so check it out.
You can find me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC, or head over to my website, BumbleKing.com, that has a schedule of all my work that is coming out, past and present, all my con appearances, all that good stuff.
Don't forget, you can also follow the Bumblecast at BumbleCast on Twitter, or you can email us at BumbleCast@Yahoo.com.
Patrons, you can join us every Friday evening, Bumblecast Gaming Live, where Kyle and I will play a game for your pleasure. You can also head over to twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming, where we will eventually get back to streaming games when we have time and energy.
Yeah. We've kind of fallen off that. I hope we can get back on it. But in the meantime, get you some Bumble merch over at our Bumble store at shop.spreadshirt.com/Bumble store. We can get some Bumble, Bumble leg warmers.
Possibly.
Maybe. I don't know for sure. I don't know exactly what they have there. Maybe you can get like a Bumble. Maybe you can get Bumble underwear. I don't know if they have that there. They probably don't. Maybe you can get like a Bumble cap.
Or a Bumble case for your Bumble cell phone.
A Bumble case for your Bumble phone.
Just don't Bumble your phone because I don't know what you're wearing.
Yes, don't do that.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast episode 71. We will see you in 2 weeks for episode 72. Have a good one, everybody.
Bye.
And you good to edit this one?
Yeah, once we take out all of the times that I completely bungled my words and forgot things and didn't know what I was saying, we're probably looking at more like, 20 minutes.
Okie dokie.
We're gonna have to have a. I'm gonna have to have a talking to with them. They're gonna have to listen to me, some rando on the internet.
I'm sure they're quaking in anticipation.
They should be quaking in their boots. They shouldn't be anticipating anything. They should be scared. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay what you want download.
The internet was a mistake.
The internet was a mistake. It's like anime.